Hello and welcome to episode number 9 of the Eggers Gallery Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Eggers. Our show recognizes and celebrates visual artists who exhibit their art at the Eggers Gallery. For more information about the artists and the gallery, please visit eggersgallery.com or find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Today's interview is with visual artist Mark Lavatelli. Now let's take a peek inside the artist's studio.
Hello, my name is Mark Lavatelli. I am a painter in Buffalo, New York. I focus a lot on trees as subject matter. I'm also an encaustic artist. I've been painting with encaustic for 30 years. I really enjoy the unique qualities of encaustic paint. I'm also a teacher. I've been teaching college more or less since 1972. forward, ultimately, to retirement. I used to live in Dallas and sold a lot of work there in the 1980s, and I show in Western New York and other places in the meantime. I'm also part-time art historian and have done research and writing on the early work of Richard Diebenkorn, a famous California painter. He's also, in a sense, one of my influences.
Great. Well, we thank you for joining us, Mark, for the Forestry Show at the Eggers Gallery. So first off, we'd love to know, how is your personality reflected in your work?
I think it does reveal an orientation, I guess, in terms of being a formalist. Obviously, the work does not reveal a lot about social, political, or interpersonal relationship content. And most recent work, including some of the ones that I've entered in the Forest Show, show my love of color and color relationships.
What would you say influences your art?
As I mentioned in my intro, I really responded and to the work of Richard Diebenkorn, both his Ocean Park and his figurative work, and I did extensive research into his early period when he was a graduate student at the University of New Mexico, because that was also where I was a graduate student in the late 1970s. So I've written several things regarding his Albuquerque period. I'm also interested in early modernism. In particular, I'm very fond of the color square paintings of Paul Klee, and many of my works, even though they have tree imagery, have elements of geometric abstraction merged with the work. For a while, I was using words also that reference elements of landscape and also environmental threats. Being a wax artist, because that's what encaustic is, I'm very concerned about colony collapse disorder and some of the pesticides like neonicotinoids that are in use in the United States that I think are a contributing factor to the decline of the bee population. So for a while I was doing work that was a little more environmentally concerned, but the most recent body is really largely about color relationships.
Interesting.
And they can be seen on my website, which is marklavatelli.com.
Could you describe a real-life situation that inspired a specific piece of artwork for you?
When I was in graduate school in Albuquerque, a friend of mine introduced me to a hiking trail up in the Sandia Mountains that ultimately led to a stream, and there was an area of deadfall timber where it looked like maybe a whole variety of trees, maybe aspen trees, had tumbled into this creek bed and formed a remarkable configuration that was both organic and geometric at the same time. And so doing drawings, photographs, and paintings of those tree logs or deadfall timber was sort of a seminal experience that still informs some of the compositions that I use. I guess, you know, the environmental concern that I mentioned a moment ago, it started really when I was doing a residency in Wyoming. This was a terrific residency called Gentel. On the way there, I passed one of the largest open pit coal mines in the United States and got interested in coal and the idea that power plants can actually be clean coal and not emit so much CO2. And so I did research into that and discovered that although it's possible, it's not particularly economically a viable alternative, which is why we don't see very many, if any, clean coal plants at the moment. So that experience, you know, seeing all that coal being mined, perhaps led to that particular aspect of content.
Definitely. And what would you say makes art good to you?
That's such an ambiguous concept.
Exactly.
I really
leave it wide open for you.
I would really almost rather not attempt an answer because it is so completely subjective. Mm-hmm. But I guess, you know, in reflecting on art and art shows, I've decided in my life to focus on painting. So what I find a clue to a good painting show is if when I'm viewing the work, it makes me feel like I want to get to the studio and get to work.
Mm-hmm.
Then I mean, there's obviously something going on that is, you know, clicking or you know, pushing the right buttons to make me excited about the act of painting.
How do you go about starting a new work of art?
Typically, in encaustic painting, I start out with a layer of more or less monochrome color, and then because of my interest in trees, I usually start with an image of a tree,
mm-hmm.
and I often transfer it from a photograph that I've taken of a tree and begin the painting with the tree image. And sometimes the tree image is more visible at the end or discernible at the conclusion, and other times it's less discernible. It sort of mm-hmm. depends on the individual painting. I also use charcoal transfer process to create encaustic monotypes. It turns mm-hmm. out that when you have a smooth room temperature surface of thin wax, either panel or on the palette that I use, if you turn a charcoal or a graphite drawing upside down and rub the heck out of the back of it, the charcoal or the graphite transfers into the wax surface perfectly.
Nice.
Perfectly. Yeah. What a cool thing. So when I do the monotype, that's often how I start it out. But the first printing of the monotype lens gives an image that's not very dark. You know, it's kind of ghost-like. And so I've been using a material called Duralar as a printing surface. And I go over the image with trace shapes on the Duralar and then apply encaustic paint to the Duralar and then print that onto the monotype to enhance it, to make the branches and trunks darker and to add different colors.
How would you say your practice has changed over time from when you first started back in college to now? What are some of the things that you've progressed through the years?
I suppose, you know, fundamentally, the discovery of encaustic. Mm-hmm. I started out as basically an oil painter, you know, oil on canvas, like many of us do.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Or acrylic, right? Then, like I said, 30 years ago, I sort of stumbled across encaustic almost by accident. And because of its unique characteristic, which is that it's all based on temperature, when you paint with pure encaustic, it cools and hardens in 1 second.
Wow.
So it's, and that sort of hooked me. And so, you know, I've been exploring that for quite a long time now. So that's one big change. And then discovering monotypes also, because I used to use encaustic combined with other media on paper. The problem is that although if they're well treated and framed, the process is solid. If the painting on paper with encaustic leaves works that they're fragile because they're flexed, or if they get really cold and bumped, the paint can chip off. That was a liability. But when I discovered encaustic monotype printmaking by seeing a demonstration by this awesome artist from Santa Fe, New Mexico named Paula Rowland at the first National Encaustic Painting Conference 10 years ago, it occurred to me that this was a way to use encaustic on paper that was not fragile. Because when you do an encaustic print, the wax paint goes into the paper. It's not just on the paper, it's really in the paper. And so there isn't that potential of the paint coming off because it's in the paper, not on the paper. So that's why I've been doing encaustic monotypes.
What would you say are your future goals as an artist?
Going full-time. Hopefully nearing the end or near the end of a teaching career. I might be able to go half-time. But eventually when I retire, I'll be able to be an artist full-time. I'm looking forward to that because I'll have not only more time to make art, but I'll also have more time to market and try to find other outlets. So that's what I'm really looking forward to. Next semester, I was able to work and get a whole new body of work accomplished. And I did a residency at the Vermont Studio Center, which is a terrific residency, very stimulating and excellent experience.
Where are some of the places that you go when you're looking for calls to artists?
I use this residency site called resartist.org, and it's resartist dot org.
Where would you say you have the most success in selling your art?
An art dealer locally has been supportive of my practice for nearly 30 years, and I sell through her. And also, she is currently working with some other local dealers, and so they've been pretty good at tapping a rather small local market. I have sold through websites. I do have work on firstdibs.com. So certainly the internet's useful. One of my goals is to reach out further to find other venues and other sources. But typically I've just been selling either locally or through First Dibs website.
If you were to take us through a virtual walkthrough of your daily routine when you're in your studio creating your art, what could you tell us about what's going on in that space?
The first thing I do is turn on the hot plate, because it takes about 15 to 20 minutes for it to get hot enough to be able to paint with. And it depends. Then I'm either working on one or more paintings, or could be working on a monotype. And so depending, you know, but I'm still using the hot plate in any case. I often listen to music, but sometimes I just listen to National Public Radio. It's been kind of a challenge not to get too absorbed with current political situation, which can be quite distracting, frankly.
Yeah, always something going on there.
Yeah, I mean, then there are times where I do sort of logistic things like cleaning up or making paint. I make a lot of my own encaustic paint. So when I'm running low on some colors, I get out my glove box, and in the glove box I have a little griddle, and I put in the wax and a muffin tin and whatever pigment color I want to create. And then I melt the wax and mix the pigment into it and drip it into the muffin tin and make little cakes of encaustic paint. So,
nice.
Yeah, you have to be careful because some of the pigments are toxic, you know, heavy metals like cobalt or manganese or cadmium. And so that's why I have an airtight glove box so that I can make the paint without either compromising my own health or allowing the paint to disperse in the studio, which would also accumulate over time. So, and then at other times, I have to make panels to paint on. Sometimes I actually create my own gesso, Gutschalk gesso, which is like the kind of gesso artists used before the invention of acrylic gesso. And it's great stuff. It's a little time consuming to make, but it creates a beautiful surface upon which to paint. Often my studio availability is based on my teaching schedule, although during the summers I can basically work during the day, and I like to get there in the morning and, you know, work through time when it's kind of time to come home and walk the dog and do chores, make dinner, whatever.
Is your studio at your home or off-site?
No, it's in an old warehouse building in Buffalo. I have a rough space, but it works very well for me. I can actually ride my bicycle back and forth if the weather's good. And so it's not that far away. It's relatively affordable. It works out.
What's the best tip you could give another artist?
That's also a toughie, a tough question. Since I'm older, I would say, if you're a young artist, you need to be open to new ideas and really look around, see what's going on. On the other hand, you need to be able to focus and reject things to be able to accomplish anything. It's kind of a contradiction in a way, because you're very often artist sensibilities tend to be curious. You know, you're curious what's going on in the world, and so you want to find out what other artists are doing and what's happening, you know. But in your own practice, to be able to accomplish something worthwhile, you need to be able to focus, and that way that means you have to eliminate a lot of things. And so that's kind of a challenge at times. You have to have confidence in yourself, even in spite of the challenges that artists face, not getting a lot of support from our society in general. You have to have a pretty good ego strength to continue.
And you mentioned it before, but where can people go to find out more about your work?
I have this website, marklavatelli.com, examples of installation views of different exhibitions I've held. I also have explanation about what encaustic work is, an artist statement that I probably need to update, don't we all, and a resume as well.
Perfect. Thank you, Mark, for joining us here at the Eggers Gallery. We look forward to seeing more of your work, and everyone can check out eggersgallery.com to see Mark's work in the Forest Show.
Yes, and I look forward to seeing the Forest Show online starting September 1st, correct?
Definitely. The Eggers Gallery would like to thank all of the participating artists in the Forest Show. Those include Chaz Martin, CJ Elsick, Jamie Rodriguez, Julie Guerrero, Maya Cereda, Mark Lavatelli, Mauricio Paz-Viola, Nicole Ferran, and Robert Mullinex. For more information, please visit theeggersgallery.com. Thank you for joining us on our peek inside the artist studio.